Welcome to Sky Talkers. Here are your hosts, Charlotte and Caitlin.
Hello, and welcome to Sky Talkers. I'm your host, Charlotte.
Hey, everyone. I'm your other host, Caitlin, and welcome to this week's episode where we're talking all about The Bad Batch Season 3, Episodes 12, 13, and 14. We were looking at our schedule at the beginning of Season 3, kind of deciding how to parse out all of these episodes because we're not doing week to week. And I remember we got to the end thinking, well, it doesn't feel right to have episode 14 with the finale. It feels like the finale will stand on its own. So I don't know. It created this kind of weird group of three near the end here.
It's a weird group of three, but it's also not. We're leading up to the finale, and it makes a lot of sense. And that's generally what we're going to be talking about today. So
yeah, and they do feel like an arc.
I know.
They're kind of self-contained in that way, I think, as the Bad Batch are making their way to Tantus.
So this podcast will be going live with episode 14, Flash Strike, because Caitlin and I actually got screeners for these episodes. So we did get to watch them together, and honestly, I felt like they all go together. So I'm really happy that we're doing it this way and we're covering it with these three all together. So let's start off with Juggernaut.
Yeah. So Juggernaut was directed by Stuart Lee, written by Ezra Nachman. Ezra, back again.
It's just back again with Ezra.
I always have to shout it out when we get another Ezra episode.
I know.
This one was the thing about all three of these episodes is I feel like they were very action heavy, especially on the Bad Batch side of things, as we're really seeing them risk it all in order to find a way to Tantus. And of course, the big thing with Juggernaut here is that they end up going back to find Rampart. And this is intel that Crosshair gives them. Let's talk about this beginning a little bit, though, because, you know, Juggernaut comes off the tails of, what is it called, Point of No Return, where we, you know, you and I both freak the freak out with Crosshair missing the shot, letting Omega get away. Wrecker was down and out. We didn't know what was going on with Hunter. I was quite literally beside myself. And then we have this opening with the rest of the Bad Batch. And this is where Crosshair gives that intel about Rampart. And, you know, Rampart could know a way to Tantus, but Crosshair has never shared this before because Tantus wasn't ever a place he wanted to go back. And I gotta say, probably my one critique for these three episodes is that, I don't know, I kind of felt like we would get more of this angsty moment of reveal. We would get to see this moment of reveal where Crosshair has to tell Hunter and Wrecker what has happened to Omega, and perhaps some tension there of Hunter and Wrecker being frustrated with Crosshair that he allowed this to happen. And I don't know, it kind of reminded me of the fact that we never saw Omega tell Crosshair what happened to Tech, and we kind of missed that moment. And I kind of felt a similar feeling in this situation, too.
I agree. And I also think they're seeding a lot of things about how people outside of the Bad Batch don't necessarily trust that Crosshair is on their side. They keep bringing this up, not just in Juggernaut, but later in Flash Strike as well. And I just feel like there's some things missing a little bit about this angstiness, or they're like leading us to something that might take us by surprise and we'll look back and be like, oh, that's what that was leading to. Even though I feel like I can smell it from a mile away. You know what I mean? I totally agree with you. I feel like there's something missing here. And I feel the same way again about the fact that I feel like I didn't get enough mourning of Tech, to be honest. And like, that's a critique I have. And then this is another one, I suppose.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's just kind of surprising. We get this line from Crosshair where he says the Empire would have destroyed this whole town. She stopped them, which I thought was great. But yeah, kind of what we've been saying. I kind of thought we would see this moment of realization, especially for someone like Hunter, to realize that Omega was taken, Crosshair allowed it. It was Omega's idea, this whole thing. I think Hunter and Wrecker would obviously come around, which it feels like they did, to the fact that this was Omega's decision. But I just feel like there would have been some hurt there when they found out what had happened. And I wish we would have seen that.
Especially given the episode The Return, where Crosshair and Hunter were really fighting over Omega, really, and like who Omega really likes
more
the most. It was honestly deeper than that, but
yeah,
I feel like they were setting us up for some tension here, and that tension was either did not come to the surface or it was written out or something. There feels like there's something missing here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just I do think it's interesting that Crosshair knew about Rampart as a clue about how to find Tantus and just did not bring it up until he needed to. Like, that's weird.
So are you saying you think there's a moment Crosshair could betray them in the future?
Well, I wrote this in our notes where I'm just like, there's so many things that are supposed to be testing our trust for Crosshair's own quote-unquote redemption to come back into the Bad Batch. And I think this is probably the proper way to handle Crosshair returning, by the way, to have these moments of questioning doubt and things like that. But given the way that the story is sort of in its own simplicity hinting at things down the line, I worry a little bit about that, even though I do trust Crosshair because I see how much he is devoted to Omega.
Yeah, I think this will be an interesting thing to come back to once we do see the finale and kind of piece it all together with where Crosshair ends up. This concept of Crosshair kind of keeping this thing about Rampart and that Rampart could have information about Tantus. I don't know. I feel like they could have... If the idea is that Crosshair, as Crosshair says, Tantus wasn't ever a place he wanted to go back, and that's why he kept this information to himself, I wonder if they maybe could have seeded more of, I don't know, some comments here and there from Crosshair about not wanting to rescue the clones from Tantus. Because the past few weeks, we've had a lot of people kind of confirming to Omega that we're going to save the clones on Tantus, you know, and that's what she's been talking about this whole time. And maybe I'm forgetting a line or a moment, so forgive me if so, but I don't know. If we had seen Crosshair say something about, you know, it's not important or we're never going to rescue them. I kind of feel like he did say something like that. So maybe I'm eating my own words. But I don't know. It might have made more clear his decision to keep this from everyone else, especially when we had, you know, what was that episode called where we have the fight with the CX trooper in the water and we've got the rest of the clones and Rex mm-hmm. and Haller and everyone talking about how they don't trust Crosshair. And Crosshair is like, I'm giving you all the information I have. Don't you, like, you should trust me. And clearly he wasn't. So I don't know. It's something to reconcile and something to kind of keep in mind as we move towards the finale.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We do have the final introduction of Crosshair and Phi, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
And he says, you must be Crosshair. Tech told me all about your sparkling personality. And just, you know, I wrote in my notes, no, you're crying. And it's cute. I feel I've seen so much good fan art and headcanons of people with like little comics and stuff on Twitter of Tech and Fee talking about Crosshair and all the other things they might have talked about together. And it's just been very cute, stemming from this one little line from Fee.
See, this is what I mean. We're missing some of that Tech mm-hmm. mourning. And maybe we're leading towards Tech being that one trooper.
Stop it.
Still crossing my fingers that that's true. But I feel like, is it just me? Or does Fee look like she's been crying? Like, her eyes look a little different to me. And like sadder, different. I think I might be delusional and might be reading into it, but
I like yeah. this headcanon, this like grieving headcanon.
Where we're going.
Yeah, but I did not see it. And I gotta say, I kind of feel like it's not Tech anymore today, day of recording.
Today you feel this way? Okay.
Today I feel this way, April 21st, 7:30 p.m., that it's not Tech.
Okay.
We haven't seen him now in 3 episodes. And
see, I think we're building to a fantastic return. Today it's April 21st, 7:39 p.m. I feel like we're leading towards him returning. Like, I'm thinking about the glass half full. And you're not.
I so love that about you in this moment. I literally don't know. I waffle so much. We can check in at 8 o'clock and see if I've changed my mind.
The reason why I feel strongly about this is because I feel like they're not mourning Tech enough. They're not spending a lot of time mourning him. It was such a big moment.
I think some people could say, though, from the showrunner's perspective of we can't spend this whole season grieving Tech. They've mentioned him multiple times. We of course have multiple emotional moments with the goggles. We have Fee bringing him up, you know.
Okay, but can we compare the death of Tech to the death of Kanan in Rebels and how much airtime we got about grieving that death?
Okay, I see what you're saying, but I will caveat that by saying that we got a solid full episode, essentially, of just straight grieving from the Rebels crew, which was great. Mm-hmm. But this was also at the end of the season Yeah, but Tech died a season ago. Like, we can't have 12 episodes of full-on grieving.
Well, we could have one.
We could have had
given one. The fact that Kane, yeah, we could have had one.
No, I agree. We could have had one, but when would they have done
and so,
that?
Because well, why so would much- they do that if we were bringing him back? That would be wasted space and wasted story.
Yeah, but there was such a huge time jump in the beginning. So the day of grieving that we would have seen on Tantus, for example,
listen,
skipped over because of
I
the
do
time
feel
jump.
Like we're switching places a little bit because. I feel like I have argued the same on your side, but so I don't know.
So
I just
you can't
I
take like, any of our speculation seriously because we just change it the next week.
Yeah. I don't know. I believe.
This is the classic case of me now that we're at the end of not wanting to get my hopes up too high. So I'm not disappointed when he's gone. That way I can be so overwhelmingly excited if he is in fact
so true.
Back.
So true. It's, yeah. It's okay, so we're mechanism. Just like resetting to like a baseline.
It's a defense mechanism. Yeah. And maybe we even end not knowing. Mm-hmm. So then the possibility, I don't know if I really want that either, I'll be honest, but the possibility is that he could be in a future story.
Ugh, that would be such a freaking Star Wars thing to do.
No, let's not. The episode's
to
already
give
done.
A hint
the finale is
to
done.
The helmet being removed and seeing...
And it ends?
Why would you mention that?
And it removing it and seeing that it is Tech and then the show ends?
And then Omega going off and doing something separate? I don't know.
It could end like that because my last speculation about the end was that Omega was actually going to go off with Emery and there was something that the two of them had to do because they have the scientific knowledge, right? If it's about knowledge, they've got a deeper knowledge than – the rest of the Bad Batch have about what
the two
going
female
on.
Clones and everything.
Yeah, so it could end, right? If it is revealed to be Tech and Omega's like, I feel like I have to go do this thing, but I don't want to leave Tech. And the rest of the Bad Batch are like, don't worry, we'll take care of him. We'll be here when you return, when you're ready. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh. We really went off the rails here on a Tech conversation.
Within the first 10 minutes.
I know. I know.
It's okay. It's fine. This is why it's like difficult to do three episodes in one because what happens is we get on a speculation train and then we end up talking about the last one that we're talking about. Anyway, I feel like the big takeaway from Juggernaut was the fact that we're capturing Rampart. Mm-hmm. Omega's arriving at Tantus and Hemlock bringing her into the vault. So let's break down some of those pieces. First, capturing Rampart. What do we think about Rampart and being in this, all these episodes and now being along for this ride? What are our thoughts here?
Charlotte and I were on the Helena Marauders last week to talk about Into the Breach. So, and we had a really good time talking about Rampart. And as we said on that show, neither one of us, I think, ever expected Rampart to be back in the show. He was such a horrible villain in the best way possible.
Yeah, I hate him. I hate him.
But we talked a little bit about this on Hollow Knight Marauders, but it's so different when you have a villain who kind of loses their power and then takes on more of a comedic role, which is definitely what I feel like happened to Rampart here across these couple of weeks. And I don't know, it was really fun. I laughed so much at him in a flash strike of him just screaming in the jungle. But I think it was smart to bring him back I think the Bad Batch has done this way more often than I think a lot of other Star Wars shows have done, where they're revisiting past places very frequently and past people. We actually have quite a small cast of characters over these three seasons that we've been with the Bad Batch. And I think they've done it so well of feeling like we know these characters in and out. So now to have had this a villain like Rampart who has come in and out of the story for three seasons, I think that's really fun. And just I feel like you get to go to a deeper level with even some of these quote unquote side characters like Rampart. And I won't say we get to know Rampart at a deep level. Of course, it's not like that, but it is fun to see him again, to see him in a very different position now that he is, you know, working what in a mine yard and he's having, you know, he's lost all power. He's lost a razor. He's got a beard, a horrible haircut.
Is it a horrible haircut?
Not a horrible haircut. You're right. I don't know why.
I'm really surprised that you said that.
I guess I was thinking from Rampart's perception, he can't groom himself. So it's probably horrible to him. But there's definitely a shade of hot palace happening here. I can't deny it.
I won't deny it. But what I will say is that it's always cool when Star Wars changes and animation in general changes the villain character model to make them look softer. Therefore, like you said, he becomes like a comedic part of it.
Yeah.
And that softness comes in the aesthetic and the looks, and the hair being wild and things like that is different. Mm-hmm. And I think it fully adds something to like, oh, we're seeing a different Rampart. He's still awful. He's still a villain. And we still absolutely do not trust him. They basically softened him as much as they could and gave him the hot Callus treatment, even if I don't think that we're going to get as fleshed out of an arc that Callus did in Rebels.
I don't think we're really getting any kind of Rampart redemption at all.
We're not at all. Okay. I should have been more explicit with that. We're not at all. But I think that shades of what was happening with the Callus character model, I'm literally just talking about aesthetics, is happening here with Rampart in order for us to soften to him a little bit and to accept him as the comedic figure.
Yeah.
Versus because he's an awful villain and or he's a good villain, awful person. And I there's no forgiveness that is happening here, but I can accept him in the story as someone who is going to help them and is going to be funny while he does it. Like in the next and Into the Breach when he's like talking about not wanting to wear the costume and the outfit because it's the wrong rank. Like that was great. That was pure comedy.
It was very funny.
Yeah. And I think that couldn't have happened if they didn't change his look a little bit more. I'm spending too long talking about this. Yeah. But I just need to make myself very clear.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's move on from Rampart and his hair.
Let's move on.
I'm sure it will come up again. Don't worry.
Well, in the notes you talked about how this Juggernaut has an essence of the Mandalorian's episode, The Believer. And it totally does with the transport. And I think they were really pulling from The Believer there, which is one of the best episodes of The Mandalorian ever. It's so good. And I think that this whole rescue mission was done really well. And I think it's really interesting that later we find out in Flash Strike, episode 14, that the Empire knew the entire time that the Bad Batch was with Rampart. And the thing is this revelation was really big all the way in Flash Strike, but it shouldn't have been because obviously the Empire is going to know that Rampart's not there, right? It's going to recognize that he's missing and see some sort of camera situation, right? So that, I guess that makes sense. It was a revelation and I was pretty shocked and like, of course, they're three steps ahead. They always are. This is the thing that Star Wars does. The show is constantly like, oh, we know. We're heading to Alderaan right now, not Dantooine, you know?
Stop it.
So, yeah.
Very surprised when we found out in Flash Strike that the Empire had known all along that.
Listen, I was really surprised too, but like looking back, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I guess they discovered that they had put the pieces together, that not only had Rampart been taken from the prison mining planet, but that he showed up on that, whatever their installation is above Coruscant as well, and that he had been there with the rest of the Bad Batch. I was I was like, whoa. I think that's the thing that these this set of episodes, really from Point of No Return to Flash Strike, have done really well is they're kind of putting everything against the Bad Batch. You know, Crosshair missed the shot. They have to literally go get Rampart of all people. And not only that, but the Empire knew the whole time and starts attacking them as soon as they arrive on Tantus. What does Crosshair say? He says, that's not a standard formation they're expecting us. And it's always, you're right. Star Wars does this a lot, but I think that sometimes, especially, you know, in our larger conversation of who is this show targeted towards, like younger audiences, I think sometimes it's easy to feel like, you know, the Stormtrooper always doesn't hit their target, so of course the good guys win. You know what I mean? And I feel like in these, this last kind of chunk of the Bad Batch, they've really not been doing very well. They've been moderately successful at best.
They're barely getting by. I mean,
yeah, they're hanging on by the skin of their teeth. And the fact, yeah, I was very shocked when we found out that the Empire knew all along. And I thought it was a good reveal for Flash Strike, especially seeing where the end of Into the Breach ended with, you know, if we're talking about hot moments, Hunter at the end of Into the Breach, when Rampart is saying they shouldn't do it, they're about to make the jump, the science vessel is about to make the jump, and they still haven't gotten the coordinates from Echo that their shields or whatever is turned off. Please don't get me on the terminology here. But Rampart, like,
I'm like, you're really talking through this.
I'm really going for it. I think they do call it, I think Hemlock calls it a science vessel. So I think that's correct. But when they latch on to said science vessel and they don't know if Echo has been successful yet, and Rampart is trying to get them to turn around, he says, abort the mission. And we just get this, the most intense I think we've ever seen Hunter look. And he just goes, negative. And then they book it. And it was pretty hot. Yeah.
Well, I was just on the edge of my seat for that entire moment. It was.
They drew it out. Good. They drew it out a lot. And yeah.
The tension was really there.
It really was. And I think, you know, aside from, you know, the protective side of Hunter, like I said earlier, we're really seeing the Bad Batch do anything and everything. And if we can put aside kind of the weirdness of Crosshair not talking about Rampart, the fact that he is, you know, he's finally revealing this information says a lot about how he feels about the situation. And the fact that they put themselves, they go directly onto this Imperial ship above Coruscant to find a way to Tantus with an ex-Imperial officer. It's just, it's such an intense mission and such a dangerous mission as well. And that proves to be true because the Empire knew the whole time. They weren't even successful in it, technically speaking. So they really are going to do anything to get Omega back. And they've been hit so many times now in this whole process. But they will all be successful in the finale.
They will.
They will.
They will.
They will.
All of them will be successful. Okay?
Every
We're willing this.
Single one, even Tech.
It's already written. It's already done. Like, we know. We don't know, but we know.
Just to be clear, we have not seen the finale.
We have not seen it. We have no idea.
We did not have screeners for the finale. So, yeah. Anyway, this was a really fun episode, though. I think it reminded me of The Believer, but it also reminded me, I think there's some of Solo in this. I think there's a little bit of Andor in this sequence and this type of setup. It also reminded me a lot of Rebels season 4 opener when they're rescuing Sabine's father, also from a prison transport. So we've seen this type of structure in a lot of different places in Star Wars, and it's always pretty effective. And I like the kind of contained environment of a prison and how these different groups kind of operate within them in order to complete the mission. I feel like we always get kind of a little bit of an Indiana Jones callback as well. Usually someone's like under the prison transport ship, like Indias and Raiders, and that's always fun to see.
It gets very physical.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. So the one thing we haven't talked about yet with Juggernaut is, of course, now we get to come back to our favorite conversation of what is Omega? And we get a little bit more.
What is going on with Omega?
How many times can we talk about this and have different answers?
I know.
We get a little bit more, exposition from Hemlock here about what's going on. And while I appreciate another paragraph of text from Hemlock about
another piece of exposition about this blood situation,
I still find myself confused. And I think that's on me.
No, it seems like most people that we've talked about are talked to about this are like, yeah, just the blood, man. Like, I'm not sure. I don't think Omega's like a Jedi, but something special about her. So,
all right, let's read this text.
That's where it comes down to.
Let's read this text. So, okay. Someone, I didn't write down who said this. I think maybe Emery says this. Of her blood sample yielded a favorable M count replication. So then here is what Hemlock says to Omega as he's taking her to the vault, which I also thought this was a very effective scene of tension, very similar to the end of Into the Breach, where she's just kind of going all through the hallway, the laser Phantom Menace hallway and everything.
Exactly. It should be noted that another thought is that we're seeing all the different obstacles in which she would have to go through
to get out
in order to escape the vault. So we see the big Phantom Menace laser situation, which we already know you cannot pass through unless they're turned off. We see door after door after door. She's getting deeper and deeper within, which is really devastating, especially watching this back. I watched this episode twice. Like, watching that after knowing that she goes in it, and it was a surprise the first time, but after it, it's like, oh no, you're going real deep in there.
Yeah.
Girl.
But you say like, that, but she already found a new way out. So she knew that totally wasn't a viable path. But
yeah, correct. Yeah,
which we'll talk about that in a minute. So here's what Hemlock says about the M count. He says, did you know an individual's M count cannot be directly replicated? Attempts have been made, but each time the level is degraded. And so we experimented. We tried various methods, mixing samples, our other test subjects, yet nothing worked. Until we combine your sample with one of our M count specimens, you are a vital piece to our work here, Omega. And Omega says, who are they? Hemlock responds, they are the rest of the puzzle, and this is your new home. And that's when we...
So they are the kids.
Yes, the M count specimens. So four sensitive children.
And the four sensitive children are the ones that are inside the vault with Omega.
Correct.
So what they're doing is combining Omega's blood with their blood in order to create a clone of them.
Uh-huh.
I feel like I just had a little bit of a moment of clarity with this, and it's already gone. I'm not going to lie. Like, I spoke it out loud. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. But it's not like we really see that.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty set on that Omega's blood is a binder. So it protects the M count from being degraded.
Can they just say that? Can they just say, your blood is a binder?
I mean, we still got a finale to go. Another paragraph of text from Hemlock.
When you say that, do you think that we're going to learn more about this? Because I feel like we've been fed a lot. Like, I actually don't know if there's more here.
I don't know. The question that I still have, though, is, so take Eva, right? The kid Eva. So when they take Eva's blood and Omega's blood and they put it together, when are they injecting it into someone else to make them force sensitive? Or
that's
are
the
they cloning Eva and or Omega to make a force sensitive clone of either one of them?
I don't think we have that answer.
Okay.
I would think that it's the first one that you mentioned, which is injection.
That would be more beneficial to the Empire.
Yes. But I could see them doing both. But I think it's more the first one, given like we've seen the Zillow Beast. And there was always something funky about the Zillow Beast, yeah, right? We know about them experimenting on clones that are already there, like Crosshair, potentially even Tech. I don't know. Who knows, man? But anyway, they're experimenting on clones. So I don't think they're cloning those clones. I think they're injecting them with, which is like just like nasty. Like, we're dealing with gross things, right? And I feel like, okay, so to my earlier question of, do you think we're going to get more? We'll probably will get clarity on that specifically, especially with us seeing the Zillow Beast at the end of Flash Strike.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. All right.
Okay. So, how are you feeling about this now?
About her specialness?
Yes.
I think I'm glad that she's not force sensitive. I know this was something we had talked about earlier in the season, especially with the return of Asajj Ventress back in the Harbinger. And I'm glad she's not force sensitive. And I'm glad I feel pretty confident about that. So overall, I think the rest is just another piece of the scientific experiments that the Empire is doing and how she is involved in it. And I feel like I feel like Omega probably understands what she is now, even though we don't, because I think she's smarter than us. But yeah, I think I feel pretty good right now of her as a binder, of keeping that terminology to myself, for myself, until told
otherwise.
Well,
you're sharing it with all of our listeners.
Well, I mean, that's how I'm going to understand it moving forward until told otherwise by Hemlock.
Okay. So let's move on to episode 13, Into the Breach, then.
Let's go.
So the big things about this episode, Omega really conducts a lot of research and trials to try to escape the vault. And against all odds, the Batch is able to make the jump to Tantus. And it was really stressful there for a second. So, but the thing that I really wanted to talk about is particularly in Into the Breach is the fact that we got a lot of circle imagery. So much circle imagery. It was like the only thing I could think about after watching it. We get this insane view of Tantus from above, making it look like a round circle, almost like the Apple campus, to be honest. I was thinking about that recently. I was looking at the screenshot from it. I'm like, this is giving Apple campus. Anyway. But you know, like super futuristic.
No, I got it. You didn't put Apple in our notes, so it just kind of came out of nowhere.
I was looking at it like, huh, it's funny. What I really wanted to talk about though is we get this insane circle imagery. We get Omega using the game to show the way that the vault is organized. She lays out tiles that look like it's a big circle with like prongs coming out of it and things like that. And then we get the overhead shot of Mount Tantus. We also have previously discussed how we are dealing with two mountains, with Pabu and Tantus here. There's a lot of parallelism that's happening. And then, of course, like separate from the game in which Omega is showing, the entire vault is just very interestingly designed, with just it being very easy to see into. And there's just several circles going on. But the first thing that I thought of was the Empire logo, which is a circle within a circle. And if you're unfamiliar with it right now, Google it. But I don't think people listening to this are that unfamiliar with it. The logo has always really gotten me. Like, I feel like it's really interesting. We need to do a deep dive episode into the design of some of these logos that Star Wars has gone with for years and years and years, that they become iconic. Like, where does this even come from? It's so interesting. Anyway, but the Empire logo is basically two layers of circles, which is basically Mount Tantus as well. And this also was so interesting to me when in Revenge of the Sith, Vader is being operated on, and it's definitely paralleled to Padme giving birth as well in terms of shots. But the way that Vader being operated on, the entire floor is in the Empire logo as well. So I feel like we've been trained almost to look for these kind of things. And so I don't know. I just think it's quite interesting that the escape plan that Omega's hatching is in the shape, basically, of the Empire logo. And it makes me think that this overhead shot of Tantus perhaps is also showing us that probably the vault is deep within. And so when you look at the Empire logo, there's a circle, the smallest circle within the center. And then outside of it are these things that are jutting out from around. You have spokes on a wheel. So it's interesting to think about how they're able to use those basically to escape. It makes me think of the beginning when Omega was escaping, the beginning of season 3, and how she was able to use Batcher and the dog door basically to get out, and how that was like essentially a tunnel. And if we look at the Empire logo, you can kind of tell that maybe is it visualizing tunnels as well? Can we overlay the Empire logo on top of Mount Tantus and think that this is how it's structured as well? And will that play into the way that the Batch escapes? I have no idea, but I think it's interesting to think about circles and circling back and things like that. We've often talked on the show about how the beginning of the season, Omega, we already had a prison escape of Tantus, and it seems like the series is going to end again on a Tantus escape. And what are each of these escapes going to tell us? I don't know, but it's fun to think about the format of like circling back quite literally. Yeah, you can go really deep with it, I think. but I'm like, they're telling us something with these circles, man. And it's fun to dive in. I mean, you could go even one further layer and be like, okay, we're really following the hero's journey monomyth circle and cycle. And here we go with the circle again, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's fun.
Well, I think this idea of circling back, this is what I was saying earlier, of we keep coming back to similar characters and places mm-hmm. throughout the Bad Batch, even thinking about Crosshair and coming back to the Vulture planet, the return. Why story in this larger story of the Bad Batch, why is it important to be coming back to these places rather than going to, you know, a new place where Crosshair and Hunter have an emotional discussion, or Omega gets taken to a new prison that they still have to find the coordinates to, you know what I mean? So I think there's definitely something here of return, of rebirth, circling back to tech, you know, a rebirth of tech. There could be a lot here.
You really brought it to tech.
I circled us back. But no, I agree with a lot of what you were saying about circles. I think these shapes are things that, like you mentioned, have become so iconic in Star Wars, and similar to a red lightsaber meaning one thing, I think a circle in an evil setting like this, we are supposed to be kind of creating almost like a vision board, a mood board for the types of stylistic and visual motifs that mm-hmm. an imperial location would use. And I think it's all part of that kind of mood board aesthetic for an imperial prison.
Yeah, but even above that, like when we were first introduced to the Empire logo, again, I don't know the history, and this is why I think we should probably do an episode on this, but it's been part of Star Wars iconography for certainly as long as I have been familiar with Star Wars.
Yeah.
And the Empire logo, you can analyze it. I hope everyone's looking at it so it's not just I'm talking into the wind or people just really remember it. But the small circle within, if you look at it and think about episode 4, A New Hope, and think about how does this relate to the Empire and the story that we're telling, it looks like a circle is a Death Star, right? Like it could be a Death Star. And then the inside of it is the core that explodes and it's exploding out.
Yeah.
And so are we going to experience a similar internal explosion on Tantus than we would for the Death Star? The most iconic climax, really, of any sort of, I don't know, going back to the beginning of what we're familiar with when it comes to Star Wars, right? If we're leading towards Mount Tantus being destroyed and then also the medical records within it also being destroyed, because what we know is that they're not able to complete this cloning issue and this cloning process until way in the Mandalorian. They're not even really done. They're working on it like constantly, and that's why Grogu is so important. So they're probably not going to be able to get anything that is in Mount Tantus right now done. So what happens? Does it get destroyed? Are we going to experience a Death Star type explosion, a destroying of this area? I mean, we've already seen Topoka City be destroyed. Why couldn't Mount Tantus be destroyed as well? And does that come with it from within, and is within the vault? And like, how are we going to get to this point? And is this all built into the circle iconography? These are the questions that we should be asking ourselves.
You've asked them.
I've asked them. They're out there in the universe.
I definitely think that Tantus is going to be destroyed. I think it mm-hmm. will be destroyed. I think the Zilla Beast will destroy it. I think they're going to let mm-hmm. the Zilla Beast out. And I think maybe we'll get another overhead shot of the Zilla Beast coming straight out of the top of the mountain and
right.
blowing it up. That's how I think it ends with the destruction of Mount Tantus.
The other thing that would be interesting to discuss is, have you noticed that there's another peak behind Mount Tantus, another little mountain?
Yes, I was going to say this is something we also talked a lot about on Holonet Marauders that I think they brought up, is that there are other mountains and what's going on in the other mountains. It's like, great.
Well, I will bring us back to the every episode mention it's of Jurassic
always
Park.
A bigger fish. That, oh, okay.
Well, there is always a bigger fish. That's also part of it.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Yeah.
In Jurassic Park, the original Jurassic Park, obviously, it all ends with them leaving and destroying and abandoning Jurassic Park. But you find out in The Lost World that there was another island that was also doing like backup experiments. So that was like basically carbon copying what was happening at the main park of Jurassic Park. And like, this is where most of the experiments were happening. I don't necessarily think that that is like one for one, probably what we're going to get. But I think the concept of, no, there's two different sites is really interesting and maybe something that will be hinted at the end of the series if Mount Tantus, the one that we know that they're in, is fully destroyed. Because they, I'm sure that they will be trying to make file copies of other things. This is something we deal with in Rogue One, right? But I feel like it would be interesting if they were like, yeah, they destroyed one. We're going to have to start from maybe 15% versus zero based off of what we have. And that was really brought up in Jurassic Park. And yeah.
Well, there must be something that is saved for them to have success later on in The Mandalorian. I would be curious to know if they end up doing it at, you know, the mountain next door. Because if there is something happening in that mountain next door, then I feel like it has to be something to do with the cloning. Because I don't think that Hemlock, who, like we've talked about, has this blank check from Palpatine and is clearly so secretive about where Tantus is, would be letting, you know, HR, the Imperial HR, be in the mountain next door, right? Like, this is his planet, his secret spot. No one else can be there. So I think if something is happening, or if they end up going to the other mountain, it will be to do with the cloning. Or if we find out something's happening in the other mountain, it will be akin to this cloning and not something else happening within the Imperial world. The other thing that I wanted to just kind of reference from our conversation on Hollow Knight Marauders was, and I think their host Jamie brought this up, but it was about the fact that Pabu has gotten progressively darker as the season has gone on, whereas shots of Tantus have actually gotten progressively lighter. So there's kind of this juxtaposition between them, which if we're thinking about the finale and where everything is going to go, obviously a lighter aesthetic kind of feels more like a happy ending. You know what I mean? So I think there will be success and rescue of the children of the clones. I think we will get a happy ending here, and there will be the widespread destruction of Tantus. But what will come with it? I don't know.
Some sort of sacrifice. I've been saying it from the very beginning.
Then what's
some sort of sacrifice?
What's the sacrifice, Charlotte?
Don't know.
What's the sacrifice? We've got one episode left.
Don't know.
You just, we'll you just find keep out. Throwing out sad things with nothing to back
I do.
Up.
You're right.
No solid
That is something I am doing.
You got mad at me earlier for my tech is actually dead. You're like, that's not me. Half glass full.
No. But I have always been like, I don't know if the sacrifice is a person. I think it's just like the sacrifice maybe of the group as we know it.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's separating.
Okay.
So
all right. If that's what you're
different.
Saying, if that's what you're saying, the sacrifice.
I've been saying that.
But you
okay.
We have had this conversation, but I don't think we've connected it to what you've been calling like the final sacrifice.
Okay. I think we have, but it's okay if you don't remember.
Oh, okay. Okay. I know we've had this conversation, but we've also talked about members dying.
Yeah. I think it's not off. I don't think it's off the table, obviously, but I feel like there is definitely something there about the light and the light changing. And I bet there'll be ultimate sort of nature renewal that comes with it. I mean,
yeah,
the thing is Tantus is filled with crazy beasts. We keep seeing them and they're wild. And it's clear that this planet is an animal's planet.
Yeah.
And it's maybe that's what we're leading to. I think, again, with the circles, we've already referenced this before, but there was a curious thing about like the zoo transport of creatures that happened in the earlier season. And those creatures were let go. And we keep referencing this, but like, are we going to get something similar to that where zoo creatures are let out of their pens? I don't know. We'll see. I feel like I keep bringing that up, but I don't know. There's something interesting that's happening with the aesthetic of Tantus, with the nature and the fact that we keep seeing these wild beasts and how the Empire is there. And
yeah, they're definitely going to lose to nature, I think, is
of course. This is Star Wars.
Yeah.
So. Nature versus machine. So, but it'll be great if that is included in part of the destruction of Tantus.
Yeah. And I think it will be, especially with the Zillow Beast. All right. So let's talk about Omega now within, you know, Into the Breach and Flash Strike, you know, her actually within the vault and everything that she has going on. She immediately jumps into action, gathering intel, making a plan, gathering supplies. My girl is on it. She is on it.
I know. She really is on it. She really jumps into it and is like, you know what? We're going to escape. I'm here. She doesn't even rest for one night, honestly. I mean, she does rest for one night. I shouldn't say that. But I feel like you had some questions about how much time passes from when Omega is basically thrown into the vault to when she meets the kids, or like when this episode starts. And I honestly think it's one night. She wakes up and is like, immediately, who are my friends? How can I help them? What's the deal? And who's watching us? And we're definitely going to break out. I felt like there was such a great moment also that happened musically where partial bits of the Bad Batch theme started to play in this heroic sense. And we haven't really heard it in its full glory in a long, long time. I think they're really saving it for the finale.
Well, we heard it in Harbinger.
That's true. But it's rare. It's not every episode, and it's certainly not every other episode either.
Yeah.
And I think that we're really building up to them playing it in sort of huge fanfare. And they sort of hinted at it a little bit with Omega here forming this plan and getting everyone sort of excited and knowing that she's going to be able to do it. And we all trust her because she's done it before.
Yeah, I love how she tells the other kids that too, of, you know, I'll tell you, I've actually already escaped from Tantus, so we're going to do it again. I think the thing that I kind of keep thinking about in when we were seeing Omega in the vault is that she still has faith that Crosshair made the shot. And he didn't make the shot, but he's there, so it's fine. They're all there.
It doesn't matter. He's there.
I know. He's there. And she, of course, she says that in the next episode of My Brothers Are Here. They found me, my brothers. So great. I wrote in our
notes. It really was. It was pretty epic.
It was really epic. I wrote in our notes, were better words ever spoken.
Right. Totally. No. Like it was so great.
It was really great.
It was like, yes, they're here. Yeah. They're here. They arrived. And they're causing a ruckus.
Let's not forget that the finale is called The Calvary Has Arrived.
I know.
But I think that Omega here in the vault really reminded me a lot of the season 3 finale of The Clone Wars, where Ahsoka is headhunted on that planet by Trandoshans, right? And there are other ex-Padawans, lost Padawans, I should say, on that planet. And a lot of them have lost hope, don't know what to do. Like, many of them have been killed off. And Ahsoka is the one who arrives and leads them to freedom, to safety. She rescues them. And I always think that's such one of the best conversations, I think, between Anakin and Ahsoka at the end of that arc, where Anakin is apologizing for not being able to rescue her. And Ahsoka says, because of your training, you did save me and it helped me to save others. And that was because of your training. And I kind of think we're going to get a similar parallel to Omega and the rest of the Bad Batch. I think she's absolutely going to get the kids out of the vault. I think she'll be responsible for getting them out of the vault, leading them to safety, freeing the Zillow Beast and kind of causing even a bigger ruckus than the Bad Batch. I could very easily see the Bad Batch kind of being a distraction for everyone in Tantus, with them not realizing that Omega is actually the one causing problems here. And she has led the other kids, M count specimens, to freedom and to safety. So I think I would love to see a cute little conversation like that between Omega and Hunter and Crosshair and Wrecker and Echo too. But
do you think we're going to have time for that?
For a cute little conversation, we better.
There are no more cute conversations.
Are you telling me there will be no more cute conversations?
We're kind of running out of time. It's making me a little nervous. When you were talking about it, I was like, where's the conversation going to be? There's a lot of work to be done.
There's definitely going to be a conversation.
You're right. At least one cute little conversation.
Only one. There could only be one, because they'll probably be separated for
Exactly.
The reunion might not come until the very end, which I hope not. I think, I don't know, they could run into each other in the hallway and the Bad Batch is like, we thought you were in the vault. And she's like, that's old school. I've been out for hours. Let's go.
Right.
I don't know. But yeah, I think to kind of wrap up a little bit of Omega's story, it's, you know, we've been a broken record this season about just how incredible she is and how grown up and not, you know, we're talking about Omega rescuing everyone. And I think we're forgetting about the rest of the clones as well on Tantis. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I'm sure she's going to, that's also going to be a part of her larger actions next week in the finale. So I don't know. I'm very excited to see what she does. She led the escape last time, and I think she will lead it again. And it's all part of that. Omega is ready for the next stage in her life, which maybe is not with the Bad Batch in the same way that it has been for the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
you know, it would be really cool if Crosshair is really involved in leading this escape mm-hmm. too, that we're going to get in the finale, if we get that. I'm speaking so confidently here about an escape.
No,
but they could completely take a left turn and do something different.
No.
But no, I think that they're going to get out of it. I just think that what I'm picturing is a prison escape. And yeah. I wonder if they're just going to do something completely different. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it would be really great if Crosshair really took a leadership moment with that, mm-hmm. given what we talked about 30 minutes ago with all these different pieces of people not fully trusting Crosshair.
Yeah.
Even though we, the audience, I'm speaking for myself, do, based off of what we've seen him have a relationship with Omega and really trust her and everything that goes with that, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, but there's several people around him who don't. And what would it mean if he was also really involved in this prison escape? Maybe it's that clone component because he's the one that knows where all of that is, right?
Yeah.
And something we learned in this episode or the other one of these episodes is that, you know, he knew that about Rampart. He knew, like, he's keeping things underneath his skin. And I feel like that's also a piece of it. Like, does he know where things are located within Mount Tantus that, like, maybe he hasn't really shed light on before? And does he become, like, a really key player in that? And I think he probably will, given his storyline and his arc, especially in this season. But I think that will be really meaningful if that happens.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he will, especially given his journey with the clones on the return planet, the mm-hmm. outpost. One day I'll get the planet of that place. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But his relationship with all of those clones, I think, really set the stage for him moving forward and his perception of the regs. I think we should also, I wrote down this quote, this little conversation he had with Wrecker when they're trekking through the forest on Tantis. And he says, I've been here before. It's not a place you forget. And Wrecker, ever the mood lightener, says, you broke out of here once. At least now you're breaking in. And Crosshair glumly responds, I'd rather not do either, but Omega didn't leave me behind when she could have. I owe her. And it's a good little conversation. And then we also have, you know, in our conversation of Crosshair, his moment with Rampart, where Rampart says, you used to believe good soldiers followed orders. And Crosshair says, depends on who's giving them. The Empire betrayed us both. And you think you can fight them. That's not you. You're like me, loyal to no one but yourself. And Crosshair says, I've changed, before he walks off. And then kind of ominously to himself, Hemlock says, sure you have. And I think Crosshair definitely has, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with what is Crosshair going to do in the finale. I think he's, like we said, he's here for Omega and that's what he's going to do. And I think he'll do more if he can, but we know where his priority is. Whereas I think Rampart, when he says you're loyal to no one but yourself, that is Rampart. And that's where I think we're going to leave Rampart too. He's not loyal to the Empire anymore, but he's not loyal to anyone else either. And yeah. He gets captured by the Imperials at the end of Flash Strike. So that's going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm. It is, but maybe not the biggest issue since they already knew he was with them anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was so glad that Echo came back in this episode. I feel like we've had very few pieces of him in this season. And of course he's coming back. Of course he's in the finale. And I thought particularly in Flash Strike, he was so good.
Yeah.
And I don't want to skip too far ahead in that, or maybe we can, but I think that what he was doing in Flash Strike was so great, just like him being off on his own, and the fact that he takes a stormtrooper's hand and uses it as his own. I mean, he says thanks for the hand. Like, he's the king of comedy. It makes me think of that I'm Echo. Did you hear an Echo? I'm Echo. That whole exchange that happened in season one that was just like so funny. And yeah, I'm just really glad that he's back.
Yeah, he definitely was kind of the MVP, I think, as far as the technicality of what they needed to do between Into the Breach and Flash Strike. They really wouldn't have done it without him. So the fact that he was able to get in through the little droid vacuum that sucks him up and he comes back out. So great. The minute I saw that thing, I was like, that's where he's going. Can't wait.
It really was so great.
It was pretty funny. But I think, you know, we have to talk about his conversation with Emery at the end of Flash Strike, because we've talked a ton about Emery. She, of course, had her episode Identity Crisis, where it was her identity crisis. And, you know, if things have crossed a line for her, which it really feels like they have crossed a line for her.
Yeah.
She immediately recognizes that it's Echo, which is honestly pretty impressive, considering she's only going off of the freaky hand, which maybe that's kind of obvious. But, you know, she called out that it's Echo, and they have a little back and forth. And he says, Omega saw something in you. I want to believe she was right. Tell me where she is. And Emery responds, if we're going to free those children, you're going to have to trust me. So very clearly, I think we can say we're hashtag Team Emery now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was really glad that we had, I was kind of surprised to see, I guess, one of the members of the Bad Batch be caught by the end, but the fact that he's caught by Emery, and, you know, in the beginning of the season, Emery tells on Crosshair and Omega. She actively tries to prevent them from stopping, but now she's in a completely different place. She's, you know, she's had her character arc of the season, and now she's ready to be part of the plan to rescue all of the children. Although I guess that could also be part of her ending too, if she doesn't go off with Omega, of returning all of the children to their homes. That would be a good ending for Emery.
Do you think we're going to see Nala Se ever again?
I think we might. She could be part of the sacrifice because she's imprisoned. And yeah, that would be pretty sad. But I don't know. Do you think we'll see her again?
Well, I wonder if Emery's going to be part of getting the children out. Like, would she also feel a duty to relieving Nala Se from working for the Empire?
Possibly. Yeah. She did leave it pretty tense with Nala Se the last time, but
totally.
I think she kind of understands more what Nala Se said when Nala Se said, I did what I could for them, and that things would have actually been worse for them if Omega hadn't escaped, given the binding and everything like that.
Yes. And I think that maybe she feels a kinship almost to what Nala Se was doing and how much pressure was on her back, because now Emery's dealing with that as well.
Yeah.
So we also, I don't know, like, I really thought it was so interesting that Emery first off recognizes Echo, and then it made me think that maybe there's something lonely about Omega feeling like she was the only female clone, right? And then Emery, I remember Omega being like, I didn't know that there were female ones, just like, I didn't know that there were more of me. And I think Emery sort of never bit at that. She never really talked about that with her. And I do think that she always felt a kinship towards Omega. Obviously, we've seen this throughout this entire season, from the Straw Doll and everything like that, right? But I think that through Omega talking about her brothers, does she feel like, man, that could have been me, or it would be nice to have some kinship because I feel so alone here. Like, even the people that I work with don't even really like me. So and I feel like that was a moment of, I recognize you, Echo. We'll see where it goes. But I just had to think about all the different feelings that maybe Emery was feeling in that moment.
Yeah. I think for her, it's kind of all about rescuing the kids now. And I thought her conversation with the other doctor, whose name, like Dr. Sculter or Sculter, something like that, the one with the blunt bangs, that their conversation was kind of fascinating, where the blunt bangs doctor, she already sees the writing on the wall that it's a bad idea to have Omega in the vault. And I kind of feel that Emery also knows it's a bad idea to have Omega in the vault, but not really. Like, she's pro Omega escaping now, along with everyone else. So I think to her, it's almost kind of strategic to have Omega in the vault. I think Hemlock put her there ultimately, but I don't know. I also kind of think maybe Emery could have influenced that decision, because she says kind of snappily to the bang doctor, the blunt bang doctor, of, you know, I'll run the vault how I see fit. And the other doctor is so against it and, you know, is always checking in on Omega. And of course, Omega outsmarts her. But I thought that that was a really interesting little moment, because that was obviously before the conversation with Echo. And I remember watching that and thinking, I really think that Emery wants Omega to be doing the thing she's doing in the vault.
Yes. I just think that there was a line a couple episodes ago of her talking to Hemlock and being like something about, I don't have it in front of me, but something about how the way that she was treated, like she said something like,
oh, to Nala Say.
To Nala Say, like, oh, they're just like me, like they're being experimented on just like me, or something like that.
Like throwing, I think it was something about like you're throwing them out when you're done or something like that.
Exactly. Throwing them out when you're done.
Yeah.
So I think that there is a sense of like, oh, the Bad Batch found themselves and are not accepting being thrown out when they're done. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that she is even accepting that, but I do think that she feels a sense of jealousy a little bit there, or what could have been. Mm.
Maybe see if it comes up in a non-cute conversation in the finale.
Totally.
So basically the end of this arc, this three-episode arc, right, we have Echo asking what other children, right? They obviously have no intel. And I think this was actually really smart, because, you know, the Echo and Rex and everyone have a lot of information about Tantis, but they still don't really even have a lot of information about Tantive.
No, they don't know anything.
Yeah.
They don't know.
And it's just another reminder of how evil the Empire really is, that there's always another layer deeper, another concentric circle, an even bigger vault somewhere else. You know what I mean? And then Omega tells the other kids that she has a plan after she's gone, you know, through all of the different cables and
Found the Zillow Beast
wild, that she has a plan. And it was definitely a very hopeful ending, I would say, given what we've talked about over the Bad Batch kind of continually being bested in a lot of ways over across these couple of episodes. So we're heading into the finale. Everyone is at Tantis. Wrecker, Hunter, Crosshair, and not really Rampart, but kind of Rampart, they're all still out in the jungle. Echo and Emery are in the lab. Omega's in the vault with the other kids. The Zillow Beast is there. It's going to be a crazy finale. I think it's going to be very action-packed.
Do you think that Hunter and everyone is going to stay outside? So then there's several, like, if I were to design the escape from within, the way that the escape went in the beginning of the season was very different, because they were doing it alone. But what if Emery and Echo help Omega break out and move outside of the Tantis Mountain, and then the rest of the Bad Batch are like outside? I don't even know. I really have no idea.
I think we might also, I think there's a possibility for us to have a similar Rogue One type of ending, not in all of the sacrifice, hear me out, but in the transmission of location. And you mentioned this earlier, of like copying of data, but also for the location of Tantis to be transmitted out, because that's also a huge thing that's being held very secret. So if Echo and Emery start, if Echo starts sending out the coordinates to Tantis, are there more people, the rest of the cavalry, to arrive, right? Or is it just the Bad Batch? I could see it going either way. I think that's something that could happen. I think, I don't know if comms are on between Echo and Hunter and Wrecker and Crosshair. So if he could clue them in. I kind of feel like Echo and Emery, that Emery might help get the rest of the Bad Batch into Mount Tantus secretly, and then they'll kind of start going from there.
It's definitely curious that if we want to talk about repeating patterns, that Kamino started off as a place that you couldn't find that was erased from the maps. Mm-hmm. And Tantus was also erased from the maps. And we saw the destruction of Topoka City from the Empire and people being able to find it on maps again. So again, if we're talking about parallels, are we going to see the destruction of Mount Tantus and then people being able to find it on maps again? I don't know.
I think so. But, I mean, I'll bring up again that season one ended with the destruction of Kamino, but also this ending of Crosshair and Omega on the platform. And this season has kind of been all about them as well. Yeah. So just going to sprinkle that there again, I guess.
Right. I think we're gearing up for a pretty iconic finale. I can't wait. Mm-hmm. I have already said my piece about how I think it's going to go. But
yeah,
I think
these are our final shots.
Yeah, some of a completion of Omega's hero's journey, mm-hmm. and her bringing forth the elixir. I don't know what that's going to be. And if you're unfamiliar with that, what that means, it's purely metaphorical, but it honestly might not be given the science of it all.
I wonder if there's a way to nullify the effects of her blood somewhere in Tantus. And if it's like a,
that's interesting.
If it's a risk for her to take that or something. And she does it because without her.
What if that like accelerates her growth or something?
No, okay. I take it back.
What if we see like an adult Omega at the end of this?
I think. What
would be the craziest thing that we could see in this finale?
Okay. I hadn't really talked about this because it felt a little spoilery to me, but Michelle Ong talked about the finale a little bit in the roundtable interviews that we did at the beginning of the season. So if you've listened to that, you might remember what she discussed. But I feel like we've tried to not really talk about it here on the show, just, you know, in case. But this is what I texted Charlotte after the interview, because Charlotte wasn't able to be there. But I said, the last Michelle tidbit is that she said the last two lines for Omega sum her up, and that they had essentially recorded different versions of the finale. I think maybe there was like one other version. I'm not quite sure. The first version, Omega's future was more wide open and Michelle had grown really attached to it. But then they changed it and she had said it was a little sad and that Michelle had to readjust to the new finale. So now I haven't re-listened to that interview, so I'm not even sure exactly how accurate my text to Charlotte was at the time. But I think that, I don't know. I'm very curious to read into Michelle's description of the finale of there was one version that felt really wide open and then another one that was not quite as wide open, I think is kind of the takeaway from it. So what does that mean? And I think the word she used was maybe a little sad too. So maybe I need to go re-listen to that interview, but
I really think that that's where our theories about like Omega going off on her own come from, because what is a little sad is her leaving the Bad Batch, right?
Right, yeah.
And or like someone dying. But I in general, I think it's, if it's a little sad, I think it's her leaving the Bad Batch for something different or better for her. And like going off on her own. Maybe she goes off with Echo. Like maybe she's with Rex and everyone else trying to
help. Yeah.
The clones, like, and maybe that's just a little sad because that's not what the rest, like the Hunter and Wrecker and everyone, maybe they're not on the same page or something. Who knows? We'll see. Again, what would be the craziest thing to see? Palpatine again? Snoke?
Oh my God. If we see an early version of Snoke in a jar.
What if we do?
We could.
Grogu?
We could. No, I don't want Grogu to be there either. No, because Grogu's in hiding this whole time.
Yeah,
I guess that's not true. We don't know the full timeline of Grogu yet. So, no, I don't think there necessarily needs to be a big cameo or reveal in this finale. I think, and maybe to that point, there's not even going to be more of a Calvary that arrives, because knowing this is the series finale, maybe they will just kind of really focus in on the Bad Batch and Omega, right? Like, we have all these other kids and clones that need to be rescued. Maybe it really will come down to them, you know, like Plan 100, the last plan that they're all doing together as this group in this time period.
It's so sad.
It's really freaking sad.
I don't want to think about it.
Yeah.
But also, I am very much looking forward to the finale. Yeah. Star Wars does amazing finales, and I can't wait.
And the Bad Batch has done pretty incredible finales as well.
Absolutely. So. Animation finales are just next level. So I feel like I'm coming prepared with tissues and a big glass of water. And it's going to be
gotta
a time. You know what I mean? Gonna be really hydrated. Like, the tears are going to flow, but I'm rehydrating. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm very excited. I can't wait.
I'm very excited too. It's going to be a good time. It's going to be a time. It's going to be good though. We'll talk about it more obviously in our finale recap and analysis, but this show has just been so, so special. And I can't believe this is our last episode before the series finale. I'm kind of like, I don't want to end the podcast recording.
I know.
And it's almost over.
I know. But then we're closer to the finale, and that's exciting. But then we're closer to the finale, and that's sad.
Yeah, exactly. A paradox. Ugh, I don't know. I do think that is going to wrap up our discussion on episodes 12, 13, and 14 of The Bad Batch Season 3. It feels weird. I don't know. Tell us what you think is going to happen in the finale. Please, let's chat about it. You can find us on Twitter at SkyTalkersPod or our personal handles. Mine is at Caitlin Pleasure. Charlotte's is at Clarity. We also have our website, SkyTalkers.com. Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, email, all good places to find us. And if you have a couple minutes and would like to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, we would really appreciate it. You can also screenshot that you're listening to the show in real time and tag us and post it on your social media platform of choice. And we would love to reshare it. It kind of works like word of mouth to help other people know that you're listening and enjoying Sky Talkers. And if you're interested in other ways to support us and how to get involved in our wonderful Discord community, you can check out our reward tiers on Patreon.
Also, I want to say, you can always just share to stories. It doesn't have to be like a screenshot. You can do whatever you want. But we really appreciate anything in terms of sharing and word of mouth and talking about the podcast so that other people can find the show. With that, I want to say a huge thank you to these patrons. Kylie, Lindsay, Forest Jedi, Corey, Olivia, Simon, Triumphant Ewok, Jess, Allie, Ben, Emily, Sophia, Tadashi, Brooke, Kat, David, Gary, Pam, Jonah, Becky, Patty, Adam, Allison, Tim, Carol, Kara, Nina, Emma, and Jose. Thank you so much for supporting us.
Yes, thank you guys so much. And until next time, may the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.